Welcome to Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Every month we take a deep dive into the history, social issues, and theology of a different cult. From the infamous to the lesser known, we examine how these groups operate, why people are drawn to them, and how they differ from true Christian teachings.
Through careful research and analysis, we aim to shed the light on the complex and often controversial role of cults, to provide insight into the unique challenges that they pose to individuals and society as a whole. So whether you're a curious bystander, a former member, or simply interested in the intersection of religion and culture, we invite you to join us on this journey of discovery and understanding.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to stay up to date on our latest content. And as always, thank you for joining us on this exploration of faith, frauds, and falsehoods.
Awesome. And Matt, as always, before we get started, we just got to remind people that the opinions that we present are ours alone and do not represent the views or opinions of our churches or employers. So, shall
we? Let's begin.
Sweet.
All right. So, Ryan, how are you doing this week?
I am pretty tired. Today is Eastern Sunday for you guys in the West. So, we went to Tyler to spend time with my wife's family. That's a long drive, and I just got back about 45 minutes ago, and we jumped on here, right? I scarfed some food.
You do live to the east of me, but barely.
Right. Well.
I'm just saying. You're sort of to the east.
I'll celebrate. Yep, but I'll celebrate Pascha next week.
So. Yeah, we. I had to work. You know, I work at a church, so I had to work today. Being Easter Sunday for us, it was pretty fun. Had lots of people around.
Right,
a lot of things happening going on. It's a very positive day, though. I think things went pretty well.
Good.
Good. It was pretty cool to see all the kids out. They had an outdoor service, several indoor services. So there was a lot happening. And it was a lot of fun to see a lot of the families out and about today. You know, this is this is our Super Bowl. You know, we have Christmas and Easter, and Easter really becomes even more so. So it's really our Super Bowl,
right?
Just to put a different perspective on it, there for people who aren't used to the church world, that's our Super Bowl time. It's when people dress up different than they normally do, get pretty crazy. We don't normally do face painting, but there's some weird stuff with eggs that happens sometimes. If I had my way, we would have had rabbit for lunch.
For lunch,
But I haven't got my way yet on that, so we'll see next year. I've been wanting to raise some meat rabbits, actually, but my family wants to name them and make
them
pets.
They don't.
Mm-hmm. We're probably going to settle on chickens because chickens, you can eat the eggs and I have to kill them. But rabbits, the only way they're profitable is if you eat the things.
Is if you eat them. Yep.
But yesterday I made a brisket, and I know you and I have been talking about that. It took all day, but you know what? It was well worth it. Got that brisket. It was a 12-pound, a little over 12-pound brisket for $22.
Wow.
It was a great deal at Tom Thumb.
It's crazy.
Ran them on special for, it was choice. It wasn't a prime, but it was a choice. It's still really good.
Yeah.
I just cooked it low and slow and just kept that fire going. Mm-hmm. And I made some beef tallow for the first time out of the shavings. That stuff, I could eat that stuff like candy. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm putting that on some eggs in the morning. Now, I'm sure that's going to hurt my cholesterol or something. I don't have cholesterol issues. But I might if I keep eating beef tallow. That stuff is, they say you can use it like butter. I see why. It is tasty. Uh-huh. So I made me a nice big jar of beef tallow out of that. And I put a little of that on that brisket, and it just came out so moist. You just squeeze it and see all the juices run out. So, that's enough of me, catching up on that. Let's talk about, we're still talking about the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints.
Yep.
They're a sect of the Mormon Church, the Latter-day Saints.
You know, so I don't know, right? And this is just me speculating. I don't know that the LDS would appreciate us saying that they're a sect of the LDS. I would think that they would consider them schismatic, right?
Oh,
in,
yeah.
In a separate entity.
Yeah, by sect, I don't right? mean that they are the LDS. Although right. we are going to cover the LDS later. I think that they're, yep. they should be covered for other reasons. We don't cover people because of bad reasons necessarily, or cover different groups, but I think we should cover them and talk about their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Their beliefs are different than the FLDS. They share a lot of beliefs in yep. common, but they also have some significant differences.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the social yep. issues we're going to talk about turn into those significant differences.
Right. Yeah. That's where a lot of the difference is, because, right, so the FLDS, we talked about last week, taking some of the teachings from the LDS very early that the LDS had then gone recanted, right, things like polygamy. And the FLDS kind of latched onto a couple of the doctrines and teachings, doctrines and covenants chapters, right? And that's what they built so much around that the LDS has kind of said this is no longer, necessary.
So it'd be kind of like the Catholic Church going back to, the Middle Ages popes or something.
Right.
Where they had the popes that were just going insane crazy stuff. And,
yeah. Three popes at one time. That was fun.
Well, yeah. But the but that's what I'm saying. So there are right. groups that have had, bad theology. Mm-hmm. Look, I've been a Southern Baptist for a long time, and we were quite a racist congregation for a very long time. Not congregation, but denomination.
Right.
But yet have...
I was gonna say.
But, yep. but yet have rejected that now. Quite rejected mm-hmm. that. So, things happen. But it's important we know that.
Yep.
But what the FLDS is, they went back to some things that the LDS right. had rejected.
They returned to
They've the also kind of built on that differently, too. And so that's one of the things I want to talk about in the social issues is mm-hmm. how they've kind of taken some of that and tried to do it again, but in different ways.
Right.
Okay. So, but before we get to that, I'm going to talk about the United Effort program with that, because that's something that's been tried ever since Joseph Smith.
Okay.
But before we get to that, let's start with, the big thing. Everybody thinks, the FLDS, plural marriage.
Plural marriage. That's the thing.
Polygamy. Multiple wives. Right. they never have multiple husbands. Nope. I don't know of any group that has multiple husbands. We should seek that out, see if we can find that.
There's probably a...
I could guess where in the world that would happen, but I'm not going to guess because that sounds bad to right. say that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of group adjacents that I could think of that probably falls into that category, but that's more research.
Yes, yes. But they practice plural marriage. Basically, when a little girl's raised, at some point her dad takes her and literally turns her in. Some point they would tell each other, the girl might go to her dad and say, I'm ready to be turned in. Mm-hmm. Other times the dad might just say, I'm turning you in. And since he commands yeah. all authority in their life, they just listen and literally they get turned in. I find it interesting. They use that word turned in. This makes it sound more horrific. It is pretty horrific though. So they get turned into the prophet and then the prophet decides who they're going to marry.
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking there?
I was going to say, I think that was a big part of something that we talked about last week. How the women and the children, right, even the young boys, were looked at more as property than anything else.
Oh, yes.
Right? That they were traded around or, given and taken, and not anything that's... There's no humanity there, right? It's you're a piece of my property, and I'm going to give you to someone else.
Well, yeah. The young girls, the women were, and the women, those are separate things, were given as property, basically. They were used for breeding, just like you would, trade some cows around or something. They were used
right.
for, cleaning and taking care of the house. Sometimes some manufacturing, making stuff for the community, dresses and sewing and stuff like mm-hmm. that. They had these huge houses because they had all these children. Right. But they had to get married and have children for their salvation. The men's salvation depended on having at least three wives. The women's salvation was through their husbands and their family. So they had to get married and have children. One big thing that was, there was a documentary on Netflix about this called Keep Sweet. It was a concept that was taught.
Okay.
This was taught to the wives as they were little girls. So this kind of is in my plural marriage and my children category here, both. Because it was taught to the boys too, but it was mainly for the girls. Keep Sweet. This is all Keep Sweet. There's a whole song you can find on YouTube about it. And they...
So many of our groups did music. What's up with that?
Music affects your soul.
It does. Good job.
Music is an act of worship to the Lord. It is a spiritual thing that the Lord gave us and something we should be very careful with. We could do another episode on that. But
yeah, I think that would be a fun like fifth Sunday kind of episode.
Yeah. Now, music's a special thing. And that's why they did music. Music affects your soul. It's a good thing for worship, but it's also a good thing to put people in one mind for things. People sing songs together. It builds unity, brotherhood, sorority, whatever you want to call it. It builds groups together and focuses them. And that's why they had these Keep Sweet songs. Famously, in the documentary, Rulon, Jess had some socks. One said keep, one said sweet. So when he put his feet up at the end of the night, they could see keep sweet. On the outside of, I think it was Rulon's house, it might have been Warren's house, they wrote in the brick on the outside of it, keep sweet.
Keep sweet.
So keep sweet was about always being sweet. If you'll listen to these people that have come out of the FLDS, a lot of them speak very softly and very calmly.
Right.
The men speak a certain way, but the women especially speak in very calm, very sweet manner. They don't raise their voices. They don't get overly excited. Very much right here. Very much the opposite of the way I speak. But that's part of it.
Sorry for our listeners who had to turn their volume up to hear him, and then he just started yelling at you.
But also, it's about emotional suppression. Is what it really comes down to. Yeah. So they're expected to be sweet in every situation. They're not supposed to show anger, jealousy. I'm trying to think other emotions like that. Anything that would elicit something that isn't sweet, they're not supposed to. They're supposed to be very obedient. I remember something a preacher used to say all the time. Obedience is doing what you're told, when you're told, with the right attitude.
When you're told and with the right attitude.
And I will tell you that my libertarian rebel heart does not want to hear obedience is doing what you're told when you're told with the right attitude.
Right.
My response to such a thing is we get us put on Apple Podcasts as explicit. I understand the point behind it and trying to teach children to be obedient, which is important.
Yeah.
But man, it's hard for me to process such a thing. That's part of the American thing too. You know, growing up in the United States, we're taught a very fiercely independent thing. Uh-huh. And one of the things that we see a lot of these groups have to do is break down independence. And that's exactly what they're doing with Keep Sweet.
Right.
Break down the independence. It's about the group. It's not about you. So just like Manson said, lose your ego. Just like Alamo said, submit. You know, just like Jones said, you know, I forget exactly what he said, but, you know, you got to be part of the group. We're doing this for the greater group.
Yep.
Same thing with the FLDS. This keeps sweet. So it's about the attitude. And like I said, it's basically emotional suppression. And, you know, when we have to suppress our emotions, it just leads to brainwashing into problems.
It does.
Now.
Absolutely. It.
Like everything, there is levels of stuff. I teach my own son that you cannot help how you feel, but you can help how you react to it.
Absolutely.
There is definitely a level of discipline needed to function in our society. You can't just go everything off of feeling all the time. That's the other extreme. Like a lot of things, it's the extremes on each side. But I also don't want my son to completely suppress his emotions. If he gets mad about something, it is not acceptable for him to get mad and throw and kick or hit something.
Right.
But he's allowed to be upset. You know?
Yeah,
This keeps sweet. They were not allowed to even be upset. It was about changing it in their head, not just the outside, not just holding your tongue, but not having to speak in the first place, not wanting to even speak in the first place. And this was ingrained into them from being a little child. As much as they were large families with lots of people around, they were from a very young age taught to be very self-sufficient with things. You know, the kids had jobs and got things done. A lot of chores and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is, you know, one of those things, that this idea of self-sufficiency in a collective group like this, you know, makes sense, because it's from the outside, right, it appears as self-sufficiency, but it's really not, right? It's group sufficiency as individuals. But the fact that they're doing it in America at the same time of trying to break down this individualism, this self-sufficient idea flies in the face of this collective idea at the same time.
Well, and that's what they do, right?
Again, so much of cults, there's just so much emotional, psychological tearing apart that's happening. And it's even just, you know, little things like that where it's you go and you're responsible to take care of all of these things yourself. But then at the same time, right, you're responsible for the group. It's very hard in your mind to hold on to both of these ideas without it tearing you in half.
Right.
Which is what happens. It happens in every one of these groups that we've talked about so far.
Eventually.
There are people in the groups that collapse.
And the people who thrive in the group are the ones who can just accept that and go on. So they had a lot of children. Of course, with the plural marriages, they had a lot of wives, and they had a lot of children. They didn't believe in birth control, or they don't believe in birth control. I'm saying didn't, as if they don't exist anymore.
Right.
They don't believe in birth control. The other thing is, often, boys were kicked out in their teen years, or as young men. Now, there are a lot of men in the FLDS, so a lot of boys grew up in FLDS and made it through. But an awful lot, more so than the women, have been kicked out. And some people theorize this is to keep the ratio strong so that there's a lot more women than men so that they can have plural marriage. If you got 50-50, it's going to be hard. You're going to have some men who aren't married, and then they can't attain salvation, right? So again, it's those contradictions. And to keep that thing going, they got to have more women than men.
Yep. And so they kick out the men and essentially say, you can't ever be saved.
Yeah.
So that the rest of us can be.
Right.
Right. And it's, you know, it's again that tearing down, that destroying of the psyche.
And, you know, it's not like they said, oh, we're going to kick out the men to do it like this. Although it's obvious that's the way it's worked out. I would imagine the prophets have discussed this, or at least thought about this. You know, hey, I got to get rid of some of these people. Also, it's important to note here that very, very, very few people convert to FLDS. You are born into it, and they've existed for a long time, generations and generations. They weren't all FLDS. They were all originally Mormons or other fundamentalist groups. They were definitely a sect of the LDS at one time that just sort of practiced differently. It's kind of gone back and forth.
Right.
Very few people convert. And the people who do convert, convert from other fundamentalist groups. So they were already in most of these beliefs already. I don't know that anybody comes from the outside just from nothing.
I'm sure it's exceedingly rare if it happens at all. But and I think you said last week one of the potential reasons for this removal of teen boys is those are the ones that have the potential to challenge the prophet.
Yes.
Right. As the prophet, right, can come in and say, God's not speaking to you because he's speaking to me.
Yes. And lead other people astray. If they were charismatic at all.
Right.
Or, you know, had a personality who could get people to lead them. Yeah. Strong leaders were usually discouraged. Also, let's talk about how they made money. Mm. So originally they were pretty fairly independent. They all gave money to the church, but they lived in different places. And some communities here and there of, you know, groups of them living close to each other and things. And they had a right. couple of churches in Salt Lake City, in the Short Creek community and stuff. But as they started consolidating down to become the FLDS, under Uncle Roy and later Ruline, they started mm-hmm. concentrating on the Short Creek community, and they started this United Effort, the United Effort program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you were going to talk about United Effort. We got distracted.
Yes. Well, this United Effort program, this had been tried. This was Christian communalism. One very important thing right. is this really has nothing to do with Karl Marx and Marxism. There is some similarities, but they didn't get it from mm-hmm. Marx. They actually got right. the idea of it from the Book of Acts, where the church all came together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the exact words. Lived all as one another or something. But basically, the church shared resources, especially in the very yeah. beginning.
Right. Yep. Like I've always said, socialism, communism would work but when it's by choice. But if it's ever by force, it falls apart.
Yes. And there's been several experiments
for the early
that.
Church.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, one day we may start a commune. We'll see. Only if I'm in charge of everybody.
I'm not going to let that happen.
See?
Thank you, guys.
That's the problem. Yep. See, we're great friends now, but then once we start doing some crazy stuff like that, we'll end up with, you know, feuding sides.
No, I'm not going to let you go down that
path. My side will have better firearms.
Because I know where that path...
But your side...
I know where that path leads for you, so... Just like you know where it would lead.
Well,
for
I was
me,
gonna say,
which is why we'll protect each other from
my
this.
Side would have better firearms. Your side would probably have better explosives.
This is
I
true.
I could see you building bombs, and
yeah,
we'd really get off track there, right?
Yeah, let's you know the YouTube algorithm's not going to like this.
Oh, us so. Talking about bombs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, my point is, other groups have tried this living together yeah. thing. The communal mm-hmm. type living. Actually, one of the very first early groups in Mormonism, Joseph Smith, tried this with a group that was very early into, you know, when he was still around type thing.
Right. I'm
trying to think what it was called, the Morleys. It was on Isaac Morley's farm. It was the Morley family. He came across these people. And their original minister eventually converted to Mormonism and so kind of became his okay. followers. And so Joseph Smith kind of checked it out and was trying to see make this work. He was not super successful in making it work. Brigham Young, who is arguably more influential than Joseph Smith is in the LDS, tried to make it work, and most of his communities went away. Some important distinctions, though, about this United Effort thing. It was not the church owns everything. So,
okay.
What the FLDS did, and they were arguably more successful somewhat than the other groups because they were able to do it for longer until the government basically split this up. Basically, they had to give all of their property, their physical property, like land and houses and stuff, to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the church would give them control back of their property through a stewardship claim. So the church owned everything. The United okay. Effort Program owned everything, but they controlled it.
Right.
Okay. And then any extras, you know, if you gave in 200 acres and you only need an acre or two to live on, or maybe you got a 50-acre farm, you got 150 acres, the church might redistribute the other 150 acres. Stuff like that. But it was just mm-hmm. the property. And you were allowed to use that property to make money, and some of that went to your family. Also, now the LDS had tried this, and some of their ways they had done it, they had done a equal share thing. So if you gave 200 acres and I gave 3 acres, you had 200 shares and I had 3 shares. And I was able to collect money that property made based on the amount I gave in. So you could get richer okay. than me. My point is it's not communism.
Right.
The FLDS didn't really practice it exactly like that, but they did have some inequities there. So people who gave more ended up with more. They also, by community putting all this property together, they would work together to build each other houses. Now, one of the problems you have, this was almost a practical thing for them. All right, if you're going to marry 3 women, five women, six women, and then you're all going to have kids and nobody's practicing birth control, you might have 30, 40, 50 children. Where are you going to put these kids? You can't live in a three-bedroom house over here in the outskirts of Dallas somewhere. You're going to have to build a 15-bedroom house or something, right? None of their kids got their own bedrooms. They all did a lot of sharing with that many children. But even so, you've got to have bigger houses. I think about the Duggars. You know, they were on TV for a while. They just them two. But they had 19 children. I think they ended up at 21 eventually, didn't they? You know how big their house? You know how many bedrooms they had in their house?
It's probably only like four or five.
Four. But the parents had a bedroom. Grandma had a bedroom off of the laundry room because she did all the laundry. Can you imagine that? Then they had the boys' room and the girls' room upstairs. Now, they were giant rooms when they built their house. Now, when they only had like 16 children, they lived in a little three-bedroom house. But my point is, so they would help each other build houses and things. In reading some books about this from some former members and stuff, listening to some books, watching some of these documentaries, I've seen where they're like, oh, yeah, we lived at so-and-so house, and then the prophet approved us and said we should move to this other house that was bigger, or the community came together and added on six bedrooms to our house. You know, things like that. They built this Short Creek community that was down there. We talked about it was Colorado City, Utah, and something Arizona, Hillsdale, Utah, Colorado City, Arizona. It's a border city, like Texarkana. There's two cities on the border. They called the whole area Short Creek. Originally, a few members had lived there for a long time, but as they started this United Effort thing, for the United Effort program, they started, you know, deeding their property over to the church. Well, then they started buying up stuff, and they owned eventually almost every piece of property in town, in both those towns. Almost everything. And that meant, as we talked before, the sheriff, the police, the hospital, everybody there were FLDS.
Right.
And they shared alike.
They
had different jobs.
They just kind of took over the city.
Rulon who worked for the state? Or was it Uncle Roy? It was an accountant for the state. I think it was Rulon.
Yeah, it was one of them. I don't remember.
You know, Warren worked for the church, but, you know, that was a paid thing.
And the school.
And that's the thing. When you get a group that big, you automatically generate jobs. A group that big generates things that need jobs. You got to have teachers. You got to have some medical people. You've got to have people to build those houses, some construction people. You're going to have a banker. You're going to have, you know, these different things. Your group's going to start, as you start getting bigger and bigger, you generate work. But they also formed these companies. They were famous for these construction companies. One in particular called Face Construction. Did construction projects for them, but also construction projects for others, you know, out in the public. And a lot of the young boys and stuff would go work there and go work for Face Construction. They believed in education somewhat. Most of the kids didn't receive a whole lot of education. But in the early days, some of them went to public schools. A lot of them went to the church schools as that was formed. They also had the community store, the provisions. So in each area, we talk about Short Creek, they actually had, I guess, settlements or areas in a couple different places around the country. This was something that Warren really pressed. It happened earlier than him, but he really started building up other locations around the country. In South Dakota, in Nevada, in Las Vegas, in Texas. We talked about the Yearning for Zion Ranch, different places. Yep. And each area, they would have a bishop over that area. And the bishop would be like their local preacher, basically. Their administrator. Their bishop. Their local bishop. It'd be the equivalent of a bishop.
Right.
And one of the things they'd be over would be the store. So a lot of the women in the community would make dresses and clothing and shoes and different stuff for the store. But also people were required to give stuff for the store, and they could go take what they needed. And this is one of those things that changed over time. Originally, people owned their own stuff and they had their own treasures and their own personal items. They might give up their property, but they had their own personal items. But one of the things Warren did over time is he started saying, okay, you need to take all your items down to the store, you get an inventory of them, and you can take them back. Well, then he started becoming, oh, take all your items to the store, give everything to the store, and you can only take back what you need. So there's only 7 days in a week. You can do laundry once a week. You only need 7 dresses.
Right.
You know, you're already married. You don't need a wedding dress anymore. You don't need that special rock you found somewhere. Things like that. And they believe this was the Lord telling them this, you know. So the community store became more and more of their provisions. That's often where they would get food. They would contribute food. Community store would buy food, or people would raise food and bring to the community store as their dietary things got more and more restricted. Because the whole rule of Warren Jeffs was to be more and more restrictive over time. He made it where they could eat less and less things. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of things he changed over time. He changed the breeding thing. So they were having no birth control and having lots of kids. As it stands currently, they're not allowed to have children at all. They're not even allowed to give their wife a hug. They can only do handshakes. It sounds like he's trying to kill the group off.
Yeah, I think, you know, you and I kind of talked on the side that that's, it seems that way. And, you know, with him being in prison, kind of a, if I can't have it, no one can.
Yeah.
Kind of idea. Yeah, it just, which should tell anyone that's listening, right? Even anyone that's there, you know, if you've got any bit of logic in your mind, it must mean that it was never true to begin with. If he's not willing to, you know, pass on his mantle, right, Elijah to Elisha, right, then it's either wasn't true to start with, right, or God has taken his hand away and said, now this is it, this is the end.
Well, and this is where a lot of ex-members have come to the conclusion. Not unsurprisingly, a lot of ex-members have left and joined the LDS Church because it was very similar to their beliefs already. They basically rejected Warren, not the Mormon faith. Right. Some have left and joined, you know, Christian churches, and it's kind of become a whole different thing. Yes, yeah. I'm understandably saying I don't believe in LDS as a Christian church. It's a whole different religion.
I agree, 100%.
Share some things in common, but it's a different religion. Just like we share some things in common with the Muslims, but it's a different religion. But, and then some have gone and just rejected the faith entirely in anything because they've been so hurt. It's funny, as much as I want to tell people Jesus is the way, and he absolutely is the way, the truth, and the life, right? I understand why people would reject so much after being so hurt. I'm not saying it's the right thing, but the right thing ain't going to happen after such bad things happening, you know? I understand where people get to that, and I'd love to help them get to a better place, but I understand it, at the time where people would just reject everything after going through all this trauma. Mm-hmm. So they got to a point where they couldn't hug their wife, let alone have children with their wives. And that's the thing. As I've listened to these former members talk, a lot of these women, and even the men, they did love their wives. Just because they had 6 wives doesn't mean there wasn't some relationship there. And we talked about them treating the women like property, and they did. But they're still people, and there were still relationships built there. There are these women who got away from this, and yet they missed their husband. And you're like, why would you do this? You were great your whole life to be treated badly. They still had a relationship with this person, you know?
Yeah.
I watched this one couple. They had, the man and his wife had joined the FLDS. They'd become Mormons. Then they decided to become FLDS. Then he brought in other wives. Then he traded one of his daughters for a third wife, 2 of his daughters. And yet the man and woman, they have now left, sort of. They're rejecting Warren, but they haven't left the idea. But now it's just them. They're not plural marriage anymore, but they're still together. At this point, they've been together for 50 years. What are they supposed to do?
Right. That's true. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They've been through all this. So it's interesting, you know, that side of things. So the end of this United Effort program, the United Order thing, basically, after Warren went to prison the last time, the government started, you know, trying to collect on things, fines and stuff like this, and they went in and took most of what the church owned, most of this property. And they actually gave it or sold it to whomever lived there. And part of that was because of how this was formed in the first place. So this was not that the church just bought everything. They were given things from the people who lived in those houses. They would often have an individual go buy property and then deed it to the church. Right? Because it was better for them spiritually. So what the government did is they would offer it back to that person. Not always for free, though.
Right.
I've even seen where some people, some wives, came back and lived in the house they grew up in. But they had to buy that house back in Short Creek. And we should mention, Short Creek is not a prosperous area. Lots of Short Creek doesn't have paved roads. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. You know, there were some nice houses there and some businesses and things. It's not, you know, completely horrible, but it's not the nicest place.
Yeah, it's not a... not what you think of a like a Western ghost town, but
also because of
it's not Dallas,
right? Because of this deeding back and everything, the government didn't get everything for one, and some members got their property back, but they're still part of the church, so it's really still part of the church. It's still controlled by the church,
right?
So
yeah,
that's mostly what I got for the social issues here. I think we're
So. You know, for our listeners, if y'all haven't figured it out by now, Matt really likes digging into the social issues. you know, a lot of this is news to me, right? Even still, you know, I mean, I've read some stuff, but most of everything that I do all of my research on is what they're actually teaching, right? So some of the things like, you know, the government re-deeding stuff back to people, I had no idea about, right? I knew the government had come in and seized stuff after, you know, after Warren was gone, but so a lot of this is news, right? So,
well, speaking of that,
I appreciate you bringing it to us.
Speaking of that, another important thing is when they arrested Warren, when he finally got caught, he had a lot of cash on him. They did a lot of deals in cash. Because it's not necessary to do deals. Now, I will tell you, our government doesn't like you doing a lot of deals in cash. So much so...
because they can't trace cash.
In many jurisdictions, if you're caught with an excess of cash, which can be more than $5,000 or so, in a lot of jurisdictions in the United States, they can seize your cash, never charge you, and just take your money. A lot of people don't believe that when
civil
I say that.
Civil asset forfeiture.
But it's civil asset forfeiture. A lot of people don't believe that, but go Google it. It happens in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky and you have a lawyer and a lot of money, you can fight them in the courts and you might get your money back.
Right.
If you have a sympathetic judge, maybe.
Yep.
But like a lot of things in our social, in our justice system, if, you know, your skin's a little darker, you're a little poorer, you probably can't win. It's sad.
Right.
And I don't want to make a big political rant on this, but that's something that's important. They had a distrust for the government, and this was one of the reasons. And they did a lot of things in cash. Which wasn't a big deal in 1929, but it is a big deal now because our government controls so much. So, but yeah, so they had a lot of weird social issues going on. They're still existing as a group, but it's a lot of these social issues that are broken down. The fact that they can no longer have children and things like that, that is really, I'm sure, hurting the growth of the group from here on out. I don't know if there's a succession plan for Warren. Rulon was supposed to live forever. So they changed the script a little bit of that. When they went from Uncle Roy, it wasn't a surprise Uncle Roy died, but it was a surprise when Rulon died. Warren's just getting older and more frail in that jail. Mm-hmm. And so who knows what the next level will be. But, you know, this has happened with the fundamentalists before, and that's why they've kind of split. And there's other fundamentalist groups, which we'll talk about some of them.
Yep.
Might do a roll-up issue on all the different fundamentalists, Latter-day Saints. Not the FLDS, but the fundamentalist groups of the LDS. Just some of the compare and contrast some differences, you know? So, well, listen, Brian, that's all I got for this week.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate your input. You brought us a lot of good info.
A lot of good info.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.